Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. High Velocity Radio is brought to you by PSI Digital Media Experts, the market leader in delivering digital media services. From manufacturing millions of CDs and DVDs to turnkey e-commerce solutions and streaming high-definition video over their worldwide content distribution network, PSI has the solutions to meet your needs. Find PSI at psidiscs.com, psidiscs.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from Radio X Studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Stone Payton.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and joining me in the studio this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Todd Schnick. Good morning, Todd.
Morning, Stone. How are you, sir?
I am doing well, man, and having a good time. What's been going on in your world?
Oh, gosh, you know, just starting up a couple new businesses, traveling, lining up speaking engagements, you know, just a typical day.
You are a busy guy. So I know it's getting to be springtime. Everybody's Twitter painted. All of our listeners know you're very big in the running world. Tell us about your running schedule. What's happening this spring with running?
Well, just training. Not going to do any official races until this November. Made a set of goal of running a distance race in all 50 states, and so the next race will be in North Carolina, running this fall. So getting ready to train for that.
And that's a full-blown marathon. That's
no,
not what
I said distance race, which means I will run a half marathon or a full marathon. The plan is to run a half marathon this fall, and then I'm going to do the first full this coming spring. I don't know where that's going to be yet.
Yeah, and folks still in town, or did you see them?
No, they head back this morning. So.
All right, so now you're going to have to buy your own meals again.
Yeah, I know. That stinks.
Well, we have got a great show today. Our first segment this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce a gentleman to you guys that has invented a gizmo that I think so many of our parents wish they had had. They're gonna want to get their hands on this thing as soon as they hear about it. This guy is the founder and CEO of an outfit called Miko. I think I'm pronouncing that right. We'll find out in a minute. Welcome to the show, Michael Putnam.
Yes, good morning, Stone. How are you today?
I am doing well, man, and we are delighted to have you on the show. You've got your gizmo sitting right there by. What is this thing called, and what does it do?
Well, the device that we have is a device that helps parents to manage the amount of time that their children watch TV, play video games, and go on the Internet. And what we call it is the Miko Q.
And so what prompted you to invent this thing? Are you the inventor, or did you throw some money at it and had some 15-year-old invent this thing? Where did this thing come from?
Well, I'm an entrepreneur of 30 years, and my partner, actually, he and I were discussing some of the issues that we had with our children and not really getting to see them as much as we used to because they were holed up in their bedrooms or waking up in the middle of the night and using the devices. So we looked for something and actually ended up developing this ourselves.
Now, does this prevent them from getting on some of these tools, or is it just monitor so you know what they're doing, or is it both?
Well, we decided since there was so much that was out there already that was a filtering content, and we were more interested in how much time that children were spending. So the way that we developed this had nothing to do with ratings. What it does have to do with is a time range that you allow your child to do any of these devices, and then within that time range, you can allow them a certain amount of time. So it gives them the ability to choose what they want and manage their time a little better, and then you don't have to constantly watch them all the time.
Do me a favor and review again all the things that can monitor, from Internet to just go through the comprehensive list.
Okay. What it is that we've developed this to allow you to put all of your cable connections into the device through a keyhole in the box, and then there's an outline that goes back to the device. Say if it's a HDMI TV, then you run your HDMI cable from your connection into our box. Same with RCA, which would be video games and Internet. And then there's a pigtail that goes back out to that device. And then that cable is actually locked in with a key lock that keeps them from removing that. So then you burn them what we call a time key on a USB drive. And that USB drive puts in their schedule for each port. So if you want to allow them, or you want to have dinner at 6:30, then you can say from 4:30 to 6:30, you can go on the internet to do your homework. I'm going to give you an hour, but then at 6:30, it disconnects that connection. So the,
wow.
So the screen actually goes dark, or the connection goes dark. Then you can open it up for a second schedule, say 7:30 till 9, and you can allow them time to go on Facebook and those type things. So so it gives the child the ability, and then you give the key to the child. The parent obviously gets a 24/7 key, so so that you're not blocked from any of the internet sources or TV or video games.
So what's the market for football wives? I mean, are they out buying this too, and then and they're giving their husbands the keys for the game?
Well, through a lot of our research, we have heard that, that there's a lot, not just necessarily the male, but the female as well, the moms that, you know, there's a lot
Wait. What about the guys? I mean, we can stop Desperate Housewives and those kinds of things.
That's exactly right.
There's a lot of applications to this.
There is a lot of applications, but I typically say you got to work that at your house. we use the slogan "Blame us, let us be the bad guy," because you know there's always someone in the home that usually monitors that type thing, and so it's usually the father or the mother that's the bad guy that says, "Give me your cell phone, give me your internet connection or your laptop." Some of the funny things that have happened to me and that we've heard. Is that my daughter was in a private school and she had to have a laptop. So I would take that laptop and put it in my bedroom, and then the next morning I might find it under her bed. And I'd go, "How'd that get in here?" "Oh, I don't know, Dad. I think I left that there last night." I go, "Yeah, okay." So, you know, that seems to be a lot of the things that that what we addressed was the average child is done by a medical survey about 7.5 hours a day of media exposure. And to me, that's just a little too much. Not that I want to control it all the time, but, you know, there's other things like face-to-face communications, reading body language, you know, making eye-to-eye contact, interviewing. I actually this morning saw a professor from MIT that was talking about, you know, the inability for children to maintain friends, because on Facebook you get a lot of friends that aren't really friends. And, and so that's a very unusual thing that they're now just starting to see. So
this obviously, this device allows the parent or some guardian to kind of monitor the time that they're spending on there and getting access to, from 4:30 to 6:30, for instance. Is there also the ability to control what they're viewing? I mean, is there from adult material or anything like that?
No. As we said, our main focus was strictly on time, because obviously the V-chip and other elements that are incorporated into media have ratings, and there's obviously a lot of controversy over that and how effective it has been, but most people do use those to monitor those type things. So
what's the most challenging part about bringing a new product like this to market? Because there must be headache after headache and disappointment after disappointment, and then every once in a while you do the Tiger Woods double pump. What's the biggest challenge?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the things and the obstacles that we faced were that as parents of my generation, we encouraged our children in technology. We wanted them to be astute in how to use the internet and how to search things. And I think that as that time went on, that one of the big problems was that we lost some contact with our children in family unit. In other words, not eating dinner together, always having, you know, there's always a lot of things that dinner is probably your most important things. With busy schedules, people don't necessarily pay that much attention to it. But, you know, our kids do need our guidance, and this is just a tool to help the parent. It's not the parent. So the biggest obstacle is realizing now that there's so much media on this that, you know, it's important to to manage that time and not just give them free rein to everything that they want to do.
Is there a dashboard online or something where the parent can go and see, all right, here's what my child did. They spent an hour on Facebook. They spent an hour on the internet. They spent an hour playing video games. Is there some sort of a digital readout to show how they are spending their time?
No, they're not in this device. We have a second phase device that'll be able to.
You're stealing his thunder, man. Phase two, new and approved.
That will, you know, you'll be able to manage this remotely, off-site, so that you can go on and do it. But with the initial master cue, as we call this one, that it's basically, you know how much time they're going to be spending because that's how much time you've allowed them during that time frame. Now, there is no rollover minutes here, so if their time is up at 9 o'clock, then their time is up at 9 o'clock. If they go on, if they've gotten an hour of internet use and they go on for 30 minutes at 8:30, at 9 o'clock, the time range itself disconnects those connections.
So was this whole effort self-funded? Did you go out and get some venture capital? How did you get this thing to market, man?
Well, we've self-funded it ourselves. And wow. It's been a four-year process.
Overnight success.
Well, yeah. I obviously am not the most technical, so I was always the guinea pig on does this work and is it easy to set up? It sets up within, 15 minutes. You can set the device up and set the schedules up. We've actually, the recommended amount by the National Institute of Health, CDC, is 2 hours a day.
That's plenty.
Seriously, that's plenty. Well, it was funny that originally I said, well, you should put a plan in that has 6 hours a day. And my partner was like, Michael, that's just not realistic. And I said, well, that's kind of what parents need to realize is that their children do have that and are using it that much. But we have implemented some professional recommendations, which is 2 hours a day. So even to make it even more simple for parents, you can actually, on the software, go in and push plan one and it populates that, and then you can go in and change or modify that to anything, and it only allows 2 hours a day. So,
But there's a new movement out there and a lot of new innovations where people are putting a lot of very helpful educational information accessible on the internet.
Yes.
And a lot of people speculate that in a few years' time, a lot of course management and homework will be done all online and through iPads and all that kind of thing. So, I think kids are going to be ultimately down the road will be spending more time online just because it's an educational requirement.
Well, I think that's very interesting that you say that, and we do know that. But as time was when I was in school, you had a homework assignment, and you would read the article or the chapter in the book, and then you would actually, learn from that process. I think that you're seeing some of the negative health associated with this, such as low academic achievement. You're seeing sexual behavior, drug, alcohol, tobacco use, all having an effect and medically proven to be associated with that. So one of the things that I've heard and seen and spoken with a lot of educational people, one of the big problems is that if I have a homework assignment and I'm a child, and the question is, a certain topic, then I'm going to go on the internet and I'm going to find that topic and that's going to be my answer. But when it comes time for the end of course review, I really have no concept of what the whole topic was about. So I think that there's, bullet points and things that professors are now seeing when students are actually going into college that they just don't have the ability and they're having to take some remedial courses to actually improve their skills. So there is a negative side to that. I think that having that readily available information doesn't cause the mind to think, and that's probably more of what you want to have done.
So what's the price point on this puppy, and where can we get our hands on this thing? Is it retail? Do we go straight to your website and buy it?
You can go straight to our website at MIKKOUSA.com and purchase it. It's $159.95. And we just launched this in November, so we're hoping on the next batch. In fact, we have several other devices, which we're calling mini-Qs, that will actually just control one device, and those probably range anywhere from $49 to $69. So it will be just for a TV or an internet in a separate bedroom, that type thing. But it works on the same process. So if you burn a time key, give it to your child, and they go from the living room, and they go to a bedroom or a game room, and they put their key in, they don't get a free load of extra minutes. So if they've used 20 minutes in the den and they go to the playroom, they're going to get 40 extra minutes, and that's it. So it has the same process that we work with. So,
well, now that you've hit the big time here on the High Velocity Radio Show, the media offers are going to come in. More venture capital is going to get thrown at you, I'm sure. But if people want to just get in touch with you directly to learn more about those opportunities, maybe you have some distribution plans going forward, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you personally?
They can contact us through our website. There is a contact us page, or they can send it to info@MECOUSA.com.
Terrific. Well, Michael Putnam with MECO USA, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show.
Well,
and
I've
got a show idea. I'd love for you to come back sometime with a family, like with a mom and a dad, and talk this through a little bit.
We have plenty of references. We have a lot of users all across the country in Canada now, and the response typically comes from them is, my child comes to me and says, "Mom, I'm out of time." And you go, okay, well, you know what? You need to go do something else, like go outside and play or read a book.
Right. Well, don't you think that would be a fun show, though, is to come back on with a family? So let's get that set up,
let's
man.
Do that. I would appreciate that.
Yeah. Hey, listen, can you hang out with us for a little while?
Certainly.
While we visit with our other guests?
Very good.
Terrific. Well, who else we got with us, Todd?
Well, next up on High Velocity is the founder of Threshold Consulting and a branding strategist and career coach. Welcome to the show, Walter Akana.
Hey, Todd. Thanks very much. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's good to see you again. What have you been up to? Tell us a little bit about your background and inform the audience about some of the work that you're out there doing for folks.
Okay, cool. I have been a career coach now sort of full-time since 2001. Before that, I was in financial services. And for the past 10 years, I have done all kinds of coaching, a lot of it in outplacement with Lee Hecht Harrison, some of it with Right Management. But I'm also certified as a personal branding and online identity strategist with Reach Communications, and do some work for them as well, and I have private clients besides.
Well, as we began to pick a little bit with our first guest, in that kids are getting involved online at a very early age and perhaps spending way too much time there, point is we have an identity online now.
Yeah.
We just do. And so, I mean, personal branding, I think, is more important, particularly as you get into the adult years and you're starting to build a career for yourself and or market a business. Branding seems to be a lot more important. Personal branding seems to be a lot more important than it used to be. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, I would say personal branding is a lot more important than it used to be. And everybody kind of realizes this. I mean, you don't have to look very far in the career advice columns to find out that you have to develop and promote your own personal brand. And some of the advice on that out there is really pretty good. Some of it is really kind of awful because it implies that you should create a brand. And what we do with Reach Communications is we have people really kind of dig in and figure out who they really are, so that whatever the brand is that they're all about, it's authentic and it comes across authentic. Because in social media, when you put out there a false image, eventually people catch up and see that that's what's going on.
Now, getting people to understand that they need to build one is important. But what are the preliminary steps? How do you start that process? What are the initial steps that someone ought to take to begin to get control of their personal brand?
Well, what kind of world do you envision would be where you'd
start?
That's
a fair question. Let's assume it's online.
Yeah. So, the branding process really, you know, comes from a process of introspection. And we ask people to look at a lot of different things. We ask them to look at what their goals are in their career. We ask them to look at what they've accomplished up until now in their career. We ask them to think about their values, their vision for the world, what their passions are, particularly what are the skills that they most enjoy using and who are the people that they most enjoy serving. So we have to take a look at all of those things. In a more sophisticated branding process, we'll even take a look at external feedback, either in the form of LinkedIn recommendations, performance appraisals, or even better, a 360 assessment, which we offer to people as well.
You mentioned LinkedIn. A lot of people say that's the new modern resume, that these paper things on fancy schmancy paper are old school.
Well, not if you put perfume on them. They work really well in the perfume.
Right.
That's what I find.
This is why Stone doesn't get a lot of work.
Of course, I haven't had a job since 1987, but...
That's right.
But speak to LinkedIn. It just seems to me that the majority of people that I see, and these are professionals, that are on LinkedIn are not putting any kind of thought or strategy behind their presence there. I mean, that's an important place to get a good foothold, right?
Yeah, LinkedIn. LinkedIn is really important. Everybody kind of knows that LinkedIn's important. Unfortunately, they kind of look at it as the place online to put their resume. So a lot of people literally take a copy and paste from their resume and dump it into LinkedIn. You have with LinkedIn, though, an opportunity to do way more. So, for example, in your summary session, we encourage people, and I say we because I work with a partner on this quite a lot, we encourage people to tell their story. So we encourage people in the summary section to talk about what it is that they do in terms of the value they create for other people and to give a little backstory in terms of how they got to where they are today and then to end it with what their aspiration is for what they want to do. We then look at what do they need to put in their experience section that supports everything they've said in their summary. So if you construct your LinkedIn profile very well, you actually have something that's a very powerful tool, but it doesn't stop there. LinkedIn has become a very robust platform for professionals that includes lots of applications. So, for example, if you did a presentation someplace and you want to upload the slide deck to LinkedIn, you can do that through SlideShare. If you have a video of yourself, particularly if it's like a video bio of yourself, which sort of augments or complements your summary, you can shoot that and you can upload that to your LinkedIn profile using Google Docs.
Now, I did not know that. You can put a video of yourself on LinkedIn.
Yep.
Oh, but that's cool. Did you know that, Todd?
I did, and the reason I didn't tell you is because I didn't want you to have plenty of video up on your LinkedIn page.
You've known for over a year, I can tell.
Yeah, it's true.
Walter, what I really want to get into today is I understand you got a new venture, a new partnership with a partner out in Colorado where you're offering some new initiatives to help people better manage their careers in a social media enabled world. Tell us all about that and where that's going and how we can support you with that.
Okay, that's great. My partner in Colorado is a woman by the name of Carol Ross. And for several years, Carol's been running business networking courses for university alumni offices. And so literally alumni sign up and she runs a webinar. It's a 3-series webinar on business networking and so on. And they learn networking skills. What I did initially for her was I became the coach for her Networking Naturally program and answered questions that people would have about networking. But in working with Carol, we realized how big social media really is. And we began to shift our focus onto online networking, for lack of a better term, but to use social media tools to connect with other people. Not to say that you shouldn't connect with people in real life, face-to-face, eyeball-to-eyeball, but that you need to augment your networking strategy with social media. Using, for example, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and so on, and even blogging as a way of communicating with your potential audience to show your thought leadership and to connect with your, what we call, brand community. So Carol and I, first of all, developed what we call a remarkable online profile kit. It's a little like Reach's, maybe I shouldn't say this, but but we actually get people to go through an introspective process with very similar questions. And then we use, and this is the really cool part, we've actually looked at screenwriting, and we apply screenwriting principles to help people draft their story for their summary. So when we say remarkable online profile kit, they can use their brand story for their LinkedIn profile. They can use it for an about page. They can use it to drive the summary section of their resume or cover letters and so on and so forth. But they understand not only what their brand is all about, but the story that authenticates their brand, how they got to where they are today.
I mean, isn't that what branding or personal branding and frankly, marketing is all about, is telling a story?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And this is, I think, probably some of the problems we have with personal branding advice today. Personal branding advice kind of stops at, you know, come up with a compelling value proposition. Ta-dum-dum. That's it. If you don't know what got you to that compelling brand proposition or value proposition, then you're really not all that differentiated. But if you can tell your story, if you can show your backstory, then two things happen. Number one, you are more authentic, you are more credible, you are somebody who people can trust a little more, and
more approachable.
More approachable, as well. Oh, good. We have to bring you on and help you anchor.
Well, I mean, that has to be incredibly, that has to be a lot of fun to draw people out and get their story out on the table. That's got to be incredibly rewarding, rewarding work, yeah?
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool. And I should tell a little story here myself.
Yeah.
Carol and I did a workshop for Leeds Business School at Colorado University, and one of the people in the class was a woman by the name of Tanya Riggs Clement. Well, that's not exactly a household name. Tanya Riggs Clement is the 20th American woman to climb Mount Everest, and only one of 9 women to have ever gone up the North Face. She did that in 2006 on something called the Peace Climb. Okay, so she since then has become a motivational speaker, but she also works for a women's activewear and climbing company selling clothing and climbing gear. So she was in the workshop, and she said, well, I think I need 2 LinkedIn profiles. I really do 2 different things and so on and so forth. And I said, well, why don't we work together, and I'll help you figure out what your brand is really all about, and we'll see if you can't have just 1 LinkedIn profile which reflects your brand. So I talked to her a number of times, looked at her LinkedIn profile, looked at her job history, and we realized that her brand is really all about climbing and reaching higher. And in part of that, she is climbing and reaching higher and helping other people to climb and reach higher. So she's very team-oriented. So since she's climbed Everest, she formed a company called Beyond Everest, where she helps teams and individuals with peak performance issues. In her clothing company, which would seem very disparate, what she's really doing is helping women who aspire to a more active and accomplished lifestyle find the clothing and the gear that supports them in their role. So this whole exercise of going through what is your brand story, Tanya, how did you get to where you are today, helped her to integrate her brand into one value proposition supported by one story, and it's a story that no one else can tell.
Well, it's kind of like Jay Peterman from Seinfeld. You know, he lived all these great adventures.
Yeah.
And then in his catalog, selling his outdoor wear, told the story of those events, which is why it was such a. I mean, that's kind of what you're saying, right? I mean,
Exactly right. So that backstory is really, really important. There is a book out there called Personality Not Included, and they apply branding to corporations. And the author really makes a big point about backstory, to the point where he talks about even in selling organic, certified organic bananas, Dole has realized that by putting a code on their bananas and letting people use that code on the bananas to go on the internet and find out all about the farm and the people that grew that banana, they've actually been able to sell more certified bananas. Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
It's really cool. So story applies across, well, story obviously is important to branding generally, but that whole backstory, that how do we get here today, is really, really important. And I think it's going to take on even more important in the social media world.
Well, you can have a conversation with someone and say, you've got to tell your life and your goals and your vision as a story. And people say, I understand that. But doing it and helping them actually execute is a very different. But I got to ask you to speak a little bit more about this screenplay exercise. That's fascinating to me. Give us an example of a technique from screenwriting that would apply here. I just got to know more about that.
Okay, so, yeah. A lot of people who prepare for job interviews use a technique called the STAR approach. And what they do is they write a whole bunch of situation and or task, action and results stories to be able to tell in the interview. What they almost never do is they never go back and look at, is there a theme that runs through all of those? So we actually get people to write to generate a lot of stories via introspection, stories about their accomplishments, stories about peak experiences, stories about different beliefs that they have and how they came to them, stories about their values. In fact, we don't ask people to just list their values. We ask people to describe their values in action. So they do basically a data dump through introspection, and then we look with them at what are the core themes? What seems to show up continuously? So in screenwriting, when screenwriters develop a screenplay, they write lots of situations for all of the characters in the screenplay. They write lots of potential situations for the plot to play out. And then based on all that research, then they have to sort through and figure out what's the core theme here. What are the events that I can pick and choose from to best tell the story? So that's how we apply screenwriting. It's like, what are the individual stories that you have that you can then refer to that best tell your story and support your brand.
So it's kind of like me, my side story about my running, which is setting a bold goal and achieving it, that I then can take that theme and weave it into my marketing where I'm helping you become an intrepid marketer. And so it's like kind of tying all that together. Is that a somewhat okay example of what you're talking about?
Yeah, it actually is. You have to figure out why is it that you do the running that you do, and you know, what kind of bigger goal does it serve for you? When you talk about running, you're telling stories about running, and what is it that audiences are reacting to when you tell those stories?
God, he's a stud. That's kind of what I'm hoping.
What's happening?
Yeah, right.
So how do we get one of these remarkable online profiles? Is that we come to you, you've got a website, you've got a company around this, or what?
We have a website. It's remarkableonlineprofile.com.
Now, that's clever. See?
Yeah, I mean... You know, we spent a lot of time thinking about that name, that's what we came up with. So if you go out to remarkableonlineprofile.com, you can actually see success stories out there. You can learn more about the actual kit itself, and you can buy it for $47.
Everything you're describing, go through this process, and $47?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then if you want coaching, of course, it's way more.
Right. It could be like
a lot more.
Yeah. It could be like $56.
Yeah, it probably would be. You know, so we're coming up with different ways to coach on this all the time. So people can buy the kit and do it themselves. They can buy the kit and they can get email feedback. So that becomes like $97, which is our current promotion. We charge more. We actually, if we consult with you on the phone for 30 minutes, that's like closer to $300. And if we take your data and give you the full white glove executive treatment, that's a lot more money.
Well, here's what I want to do. I want to do like they do with the Slim Fast and the weight loss. I want our producer, Brad Scolari, to get this remarkable online profile. I want him to go through the process, and I want you to come back on the show. And then I want to talk about, I want to walk through that whole experience.
Oh, cool. That would be really good.
That would be a lot of fun.
You know what? And I will pony up the $47.
Wow.
Is that fair?
That's pretty amazing. I love that.
Yeah. Oh, man. What a cool conversation. I'm looking forward to learning more about that.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
So tell us where our audience can learn more about you, get in touch with you, and again, repeat how they can get information on this program.
Okay, so for the online profile kit, it's remarkableprofile.com. They can find me at thresholdconsulting.com. It's actually threshold-consulting.com. I have a contact page on the website. I even list my phone number there, so... You know, I don't normally give that out, but if people are really persistent, they can find it pretty easily on my contact page. And then if they want to shoot me an email through the contact box, that's fine too, and then I can go from there with them.
Terrific. Well, this has been a fun conversation. I've learned a lot from that. What do you think, Todd?
You learned that I was a stud, right?
Yeah, you're it, man. I've known all along, but now if you get one of these profiles, I'll know why you're a stud, because I'll get the backstory.
And it'll be verifiable.
Yeah.
Well, we're 2 for 2, man. We're batting 1,000, but we've got a third guest in the studio that you brought with you. Let us know who we're talking with.
Thank you, guys.
Batting cleanup today on High Velocity Radio is the Director of Client Engagement and Solutions Delivery at Knight & Bishop. Welcome to the show, Joshua Letourneau.
Hey, Todd, great to be here.
Any trouble finding us this morning, Joshua?
A little bit.
Never mind. We'll go on to the next question. Josh, it's good to see you again. It's been too long. Before we get into our conversation, share with the audience a little bit about your background and some of the things that you're out there doing for people.
Sure, Todd. No problem. Well, my name is Josh Letourneau. As you said, I run an executive search firm. It's about half my work. The other half is analyzing human networks. And to give you a little bit of an idea of what I mean or my background, I first became interested in networks back in 1998. I was platoon sergeant in Marine Corps Infantry, made the transition over to Special Operations, and everything that we trained for and the way that we were organized was utterly different than how it was in the regular infantry. So that led me to start asking questions and just start seeing things in a little more enlightened fashion about how to collapse a network, how to penetrate a network, et cetera, et cetera. Shortly after I got out of the Marines, 9/11 happened. George Bush gave a speech about the fact that we're not fighting a nation state any longer, we're fighting a network, and things really started to come together for me. So at that point, I started reading quite a bit, became more and more interested, and was able to integrate it in with some of the search work I do early last year.
Well, first of all, you're a special ops Marine, so my heartfelt apologies for making fun of you at the beginning of this segment. gosh, so uh, this, this network, you've shared some of this with me at a dinner conversation several months ago. I really want to get into this network analysis. Tell us more about how that applies to a typical organization, and how a network. You talk about it like from the standpoint of your basic org chart. Start from there.
Sure. Okay. So as you know, organizations have an organizational chart, and it's the way that we'd like things to work. So you look at the chart, you see perfectly linear boxes, lines. It, on paper, it looks great. In reality, things rarely work that way. If you work today in corporate America, you know that things don't typically work the way the org chart would suggest. So network analysis is essentially a way that you can MRI or X-ray what's happening in the white space of that org chart. And it's in the white space of the org chart which dictates how work really gets done.
Well,
within companies.
Talk more about the white space, because that's where the organization thrives or it fails. Give some examples of where white space can help an organization, or where that activity in the white space can kill an organization.
Well, once we go ahead and map out what's actually occurring in the white space, we can begin to make some decisions about how we need to change perhaps the organization. So. Trying to think of a real quick example. Let's say that we have a VP of sales or a VP of sales and marketing that wants to increase collaboration between the sales unit and the marketing unit. What we'd look at is cohesion or collaboration within their business unit or their department, and then we'd look at it cross-functionally. So not only how are they collaborating internally, but how are they collaborating externally as well. And often we can find areas where the team might be performing well within the group itself, but maybe they're relatively closed off to other groups, other departments, and often we see that. If you don't map it out, you have no idea. You're operating off intuition. And as we know, intuition typically fails us. When you look at the data, you're able to make a more objective analysis of what's actually happening, not what we think is happening.
Well, how do you actually map out this interaction? I mean, is it done through technology? I mean, walk us through how that technical aspect of this thing actually works.
Okay, so you could do it one of two ways. The easiest way is to simply survey a given population. And I know there's concerns about people being honest. If it's a fear-based organization, when I say that if people are afraid to share, then you're going to deal with that concern.
I think it's fair to say most organizations are probably fear-based. Is that correct?
I'd say old-school manufacturing-type environments, absolutely.
Yeah. We're very fear-based around here. You straighten up and fly right or you're out of here.
I sensed that when I got here, right?
Yeah.
You're telling me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, so there's the live human survey, which we're not sure is necessarily accurate.
That's right. You can utilize a survey. Typically within professional services firms, you're going to get more accurate answers. Organizations that are more matrix-oriented, more open and collaborative, you're going to get more honest answers. And it also depends upon what type of network we're trying to map. If you ask people, who do you go to share documents, work-related resources, et cetera, information, they'll typically be honest. If you're asking them who they go to lunch with, we're trying to find the real social network, not the online one that we think is the real social network. But the real social network, they're going to be a little more reserved in what they share. And to my point, if it's a manufacturing environment, they might not even fill the survey out. They're going to find any way out of it. Open organization, they'll be a little more inclined to do the survey. The second way we can do it is passively. So we can take in data, let's say, from social software, from email. So if you consider the way our intelligence organizations gather that intel, they have a series of ways, right? They question, quote unquote, or interrogate, right?
Waterboard.
Yeah, you could say that. I can't. You know, I don't know anything about that.
I can say that. You can't say that.
Right.
I think Joshua has actually waterboarded someone. I just have a feeling.
We'll learn when he does his remarkable profile. We'll get the backstory on that.
Yes, we will.
No, I don't know anything about waterboarding. That's. There's you're not taught anything about that. All you know is get the bad guys, bring them to the table, and you walk away.
Right.
That's all you know.
So
or people of interest.
So what problem are you really solving here, and why are people paying you money? What are they trying to fix here when they work with you?
Well, it depends on who you're selling to. So let's say we take HR. Typically, the biggest pain points of HR are succession planning, identifying the right new leader, and flight of key employees. So to give you an example of how succession planning would work, let's say we have five internal candidates. So we're not talking outside. We're talking inside the organization. We've got five internal candidates. On paper, they all look great. They're intelligent. They're qualified. They have track record. They wouldn't be here in the first place. They wouldn't even be to the table considered. Now let's say we look at the strategic objectives of the organization, and one of them is to become more innovative over the next 3 years, meaning we want to double the number of new products. So now we go ahead and we map out 3 to 4 different networks within the company, informal networks. One of them happens to be the innovation network. Well, what we'd look for is the individual or individuals that have the most privileged position within that network. So in other words, who of these five candidates is the person or the people, let's say we're going to narrow it down to two, that are most went to discuss new products, new innovations, et cetera. What can happen is your analysis of who the top candidate is will become upside down. So if we look on paper, everybody looks great. We typically have a best fit or a favorite. When we map out the networks, it allows us to step back and say, wow, is Bob really still the favorite? Because if we want to become more innovative and he's an outlier relative to conversation about new products and new processes, maybe Bob's not the right candidate. Maybe Susie is. So it allows for a more in-depth, enlightened conversation about who should actually succeed, not just who we think should.
We kind of stepped on you before you were finished explaining the technical ability to, so you can put in software that maps interactions through emails and other and social sharing and all that. So you actually can create like a, you mentioned MRI earlier. I mean, you can see the hotspots. You can see John Smith is very much needed because he gets queried a lot and asked a lot of questions and sought after. Bill Jones, there's nothing on the map there showing that he's really have any influence in the organization because no one ever really communicates with them. And I mean, is that right? I mean, that's, so you can install that kind of software to kind of show management that hot map, if you will, of where the influencers are within that organization.
Exactly. When you speak about influencers, typically what I look for is three central archetypes that emerge within all networks, regardless of what type we try to map, whether it's a human network or not. They're real simple to understand. The first is a hub. Hubs are trusted because they have a high degree of incoming connections. So directionality of connections is important. When people are coming to you, you're a hub, indicating trust. So that's the first. The second would be a gatekeeper or a bridge, somebody that has the capacity to broker or bottleneck information. So gatekeepers can be your best friend or your worst enemy. If they agree with what you're saying, they can broker it on to other people in the organization. If they don't, they can bottleneck it. The third would be, I call them a groundhog or a hidden influencer. A groundhog is simply a person or a node in the network that has a high degree of mathematical betweenness and closeness. So just to put this real simple, they're between individuals, so they have a high bridge score, but they're also close to information flow throughout the organization, meaning there's a short network path. So their position within the network has a short path to information flowing through the organization. And the reason that these individuals make great leaders is because it's the behavior that drives them to this network position in the first place. So they're often hidden, but they're typically your best leaders. And often HR and senior management can't identify them, and they leave.
So do you find yourself applying all this Mojo 007 cloak and dagger technology stuff to your own marketing? I mean, is that why you're successful at your own marketing too?
Well, I wish I could say that. Can you apply it within a social media application? Yes, you can.
Yeah,
so
I bet you could.
We can map out conversation. We can map the way conversation emanates. Let's say through the Twitter sphere, right? So we look at Twitter, we look at conversation, we can identify who the influencers are relative to a hashtag
right.
or a concept. So absolutely. And we can make some assumptions based upon the data that we see. How long does it take for conversation to emanate? My fascination, more importantly than observing how conversation emanates, is how can we influence conversation to emanate? So in other words, if
right.
we can identify who the key influencers are, can we shape conversation? And you can.
Right. Well, I mean, all kidding aside, I probably have, 30, 40 IQ points on Schnick here, but he's got 10 times as much of this Twitter My Face juice than I do. He's much more influential out there, right? So, I mean, you got to take that kind of stuff into account when you're trying to market to a segment or even an individual organization, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, what I think what this also seems to be able to do for an organization is, particularly from an HR standpoint, where they're trying to move internal pieces on the chessboard, but they may take someone who's a bridge and put them into a role where they're trying to make them an influencer. And so that's maybe why the organization breaks down or why they don't succeed or why they move on. So you can take a look at a map of this organization, determine the skill sets of individuals, and then move them into the right places, right?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
To give you an example real quick of, and this is something I'm trying to influence HR myself in this regard. So HR typically looks at people as resources, right? So I'm not a big believer in this concept of human capital and resources. So here's an example of what I mean. HR thinks that when you lose a person in a company, you replace that resource. It's one person, they're gone. We take another peg, put it back in, we're fine. Well, to give you an example from the military, I think it was early last year, there was a double agent terrorist, basically, that blew himself up, killed seven operatives in Afghanistan. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So human resources would say we lost seven people. We have to replace seven people. If you look at things from a network perspective or a social capital perspective, not only did you lose seven people, but you lost all their relationships. So let's say they had 10. So you just lost 70 relationships with farmers and extremely ignorant and uneducated people in Afghanistan. Ignorant meaning, no offense, I'm just saying they're not educated. So the HR perspective is clearly limited. It's more than just seven people you have to replace. It's 70 relationships that you have to replace, and perhaps you can't because you've lost that trust, which could take years to reestablish. So when you look at why we've been in Afghanistan for so long, it starts to make sense. It's very difficult to build trust and generate any level of intelligence when
So is it fair to say that when John Smith is going to leave the organization, I can look at your network map and say, okay, here's the impact that's going to have on the organization.
Yep.
So you can make a more strategic decision on how to fill that replacement. Oh,
that's right.
That's
if they're
going
to retire, exactly.
Okay.
We can identify
I'm seeing
how,
that.
We can,
oh, I see.
How we can
okay.
transition some of that knowledge.
So officially. The people writing you checks are HR people inside pretty large organizations? That's your sweet spot?
You know, it's not. Unfortunately, I think that HR could use network analysis to reinvent itself and have a better voice at the table instead of just a seat.
Right.
But typically, the people that I wind up selling to is the chief operations officer, VP of sales and marketing.
Wow.
HR occasionally. But
this could be a strategic benefit to virtually any segment within an organization. Is that fair?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. From an M&A perspective, the issue becomes how do we merge the informal organization, not the formal. If we merge the org charts, everything seems like it's going to work out perfect. Most M&A fails, right? And it's because we can't identify the informal organization and find a way to mesh them together.
Oh, you could stay busy forever just in the M&A arena. No question about that. Well, very cool stuff. So how can our listeners get in touch with you and learn more about your services and have a substantive conversation about this stuff?
Sure. Well, they can go to my website. It's knightbishop.com, and knight is like a chess piece, so it's K-N-I-G-H-T.
Right.
And they can call me. Well, they'll find my contact information on the site. My Twitter is Jay Letourneau, which even if I spelt it here, people would forget. So.
Well, we'll make sure that we get it posted on the website along with everyone's contact information that we've had here today. That was a productive show, Mr. Schnick. What do you think, buddy?
Very productive show. A lot of fun. Learned a lot today.
Yeah. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick. Our guests this morning, Michael Putnam, Walter Akana, Josh Letourneau, our producer, Brad Scolari, and everyone here at the Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.